What is going on, sports fans? Hope you had a great weekend. Welcome back into the Glass Half Full with me, Jordan Glass, and ESPN Pensacola podcast. Lots of things to talk about from over the weekend. Some things coming up tonight in sports. Also, some local stories. Couple of local athletes getting recognized for different things. We'll talk about that a little later on in the show. We'll start today's show with Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals. That is coming up tonight at 7 o'clock on ABC. This is, if you had asked me a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, if I thought there would be a Game 7, I would have been highly skeptical that there would have been. I felt like, yeah, even if Edmonton would have won one or two games, that eventually Florida would have closed it out, and we would have not gotten to this point. But, man, credit Edmonton, because here's the thing, and I know a lot of people are talking about, like, oh, Florida Panthers are one loss away from losing the Stanley Cup and what could be one of the worst choke jobs in all of the NHL. Here's the thing, though. They haven't played bad in these last three games that they've lost. That's what's so crazy about this, is that they have not played terrible. Have they been inconsistent? Yes, absolutely. I mean, you look at it, what, five goals, then another four, and then another. I mean, how many is it that they've given up over the last three games in a row that they've lost? I mean, Bobrovsky usually doesn't give up this many goals in back-to-back-to-back games. So there has been some inconsistency with the way that they play, but they still have not played terrible. And it's crazy to think that really this change in the series is all on things that Edmonton have been doing better, right? Taking advantage of power play opportunities, things along that line. Things that we said at the start of the series going into game one that they needed to do to, if they wanted a chance to win the Stanley Cup. They didn't do the first three games. They've done the last three games. So really, the Florida Panthers have not played bad. It's more so what Edmonton has done to be better in these last three games. Edmonton had their back against the wall, and we kind of saw that in, what was it, game five of the NBA Finals, right? With Dallas and Boston. Dallas had their back against the wall, kind of got a little tired of getting bullied around. It's game four, not game five. Kind of got tired of getting bullied and pushed around the first three games of the series by the Celtics. So they came out swinging and just throwing haymakers, and they were able to get a game. But they just, it wasn't something they could sustain, right? Edmonton has found a way to not only do that when they were down 3-0, but they found a way to sustain it, and now we have a deciding Game 7 tonight from Sunshine down there in South Florida, and man, it is going to be a great game. Some players to keep an eye on in this game for the Panthers. Obviously, no surprise here, Sam Reinhart, Alexander Barkov, and Bobrovsky. Those have got to be your go-to guys, right? Those guys have to step up and play at a high level tonight if the Panthers want a chance at bringing home their first ever Stanley Cup. And then, of course, you've got Zach Hyman and Connor McDavid on the other side for Edmonton. And look, I was wrong with Connor McDavid. Friday when we talked about Game 6, I said if Connor McDavid scores two goals or more, then the Oilers will win. Connor McDavid didn't need to score at all for the Oilers to win. That team stepped up and played well as a complete unit. Each and every single line that came into that game, whether it was the first line, the second line, third line, it did not matter. They played at a high level and ultimately ended up winning that game 5-1 to force this game 7. But again, tonight on the road, Zach Hyman, Connor McDavid, they're going to need to make some plays, whether it's assists, whether it's goals. They're definitely going to need to help out their team and be a big part of that attack for the Oilers if they want to take Lord Stanley's Cup home back across the border there to Canada. So we'll see what happens. It is definitely going to be a great series. If you look at the last three games, Edmonton has come out and had fast starts in all three games. We're able to jump on the board quickly. If they can do that tonight, I think that Uncle Mo stays in their favor. Right now, Uncle Mo is wearing an Oilers jersey, right? He's having fun, rocking that blue and orange. But I think if Florida can kind of keep the Oilers from getting that fast start, that's going to be the key. The way this game starts is going to be crucial for both teams. If Edmonton can come out and attack quick and attack early and attack often and have success doing so, there's going to be a great opportunity for the Oilers to upset the Panthers, come back into this series, and win it in Game 7. If Florida can kind of keep it tempered, and if it goes into the second period 0-0, Florida's going to have a fantastic chance of winning at home. I think that's how Florida's got to look at this. First period, we've got to keep Edmonton from putting a goal on the board. If Edmonton finds the back of the net in the first period, we could be in trouble tonight. Because like I said, the last three games, Edmonton's gotten off to a fast start, and they just continued to roll with Uncle Mo throughout the game. Even when Florida made runs, even when what was the final score of that game a couple of nights ago? Was it 5-3? Yeah, 5-3 a couple of nights ago. Florida's 4-3 with, 40-something seconds left in the game. Florida pulls Bobrovsky, so they have an extra man advantage on the ice and 6-on-5 hockey. And you just find the back of the net. As a matter of fact, talked about Connor McDavid. Connor McDavid finds the back of the net. Pushes it to a 5-3 win for Florida in Game 5 of that series to force the Game 6. So even when Florida, the last three games, have pushed and made an effort and made it close and have found success, again, Edmonton just continues to ride Uncle Mo, and they just continue to take advantage of those fast starts they've had the last three games. So if you're Florida, keep Edmonton from starting fast tonight, right? Especially because, look, you know that things are going to be going crazy there in South Florida, right? They're probably going to have somebody from the Miami Dolphins or from the Miami Heat or somebody like that out there to bang the drum before the game, just like they do every single home game. And you know it is going to be bonkers. It is going to be wild and crazy, and it's going to be loud. Edmund comes out and starts off extremely fast, finds the back of the net before you know it. That's going to quiet down pretty quickly, and that's going to drain some energy out of that building. So that's why it's crucial for Florida to keep Edmonton off the board as long as they can during that first period, because that's just going to build up more and more and more energy and anticipation inside that crowd, inside that arena, especially if Florida can stop Edmonton from starting fast and then they can find the back of the net. Let's say Sam Reinhart finds the back of the net and the Panthers take an early 1-0 lead. That place is going to be an insane asylum. It is going to be, you could probably pick up some seismic activity from it. That's how crazy it's going to be going. So I think tonight, key to the game for the Panthers, if they want to win, you got to control Edmonton early. Keep them from having those early opportunities, those early chances. Keep them from having that fast start that they seemingly have had the last three games. For Edmonton, the opposite of that. Start fast. Do exactly what you've done the last three games, because if it ain't broke, don't try to fix it. Don't waver away from what you've done the last three games, because you've gone on the road to Sunshine and you've won a game during that three-game stretch. So you've proven you're good enough to win in South Florida. Don't waver and get away from that. I want to make a pick here, but honestly and truthfully, I'm not entirely sure who I think is going to win it. I think right now momentum favors the Oilers. It favors Edmonton. But Florida at home is a very tough place to play. I'm going to do it. I'm going Edmonton. I'm going with the Oilers. The Stanley Cup is going to Canada. And I think Florida's had their opportunities. I think the pressure is on them to close this out, to win that first Stanley Cup in organization history. There's a lot of pressure that has now shifted over to Florida. And now to do it in front of your own home fans, there seems to be more pressure on Florida going into this Game 7 than there is Edmonton. I think Edmonton's coming in this game pretty loose. I'm going to go with the Oilers. I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be low scoring. I think it's probably going to be like a 2-1 game, But I'm definitely going to go with the Oilers for this one. And I'm going to say they win Game 7 and take the Stanley Cup. So that is actually not the only championship that will be decided tonight. The college baseball national champion will be crowned as well. College World Series in Omaha. We've got Game 3, the deciding Game 3 of this three-game series happening tonight as well. A&M won Game 1. Tennessee came back and won Game 2. So we will have the winner of tonight's Game 3 be crowned the national champion of college baseball. I mean, either way, it's a win-win for the SEC. They're bringing home that trophy regardless. So I think Greg Sankey's probably already cleared out a spot for that national championship trophy there in the commissioner's office or wherever they keep the trophies as the SEC. And obviously, one of these teams will get a trophy as well with Texas A&M or Tennessee. I got to, I don't know if I can make a pick in this game. This is definitely a tough one because A&M's got pitching. Tennessee's got offense, but Tennessee also has pitching. This is a tough one. I'm not even going to bother making a pick on this one because this is a coin flip. This is what this is. This is a coin flip. If you've got a buddy trying to bet with you at work on the College World Series Game 3, don't take that bet. Don't take that bet. Right? Bet on the Stanley Cup Finals. You can find some holes there to maybe make a bet in favor of one way or the other. But in this, we could see the Aggies lifting that trophy. We could see the Vols lifting that trophy. It could literally be either team tonight. I think both teams have legitimate, great opportunities to win the national championship in the College World Series there in Omaha. So we'll just have to see how that plays out. But yeah, I'm not sticking my toe in that water. I'm not making that pick because that is a tough pick to make. That's a coin flip for me. That is Aggies are head, Vols are tails. Whatever it lands on, that's who wins. That's going to be a fun game to watch tonight. So definitely is a two-screen night between the College World Series finale in Game 3 and then, of course, Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals happening as well. Again, that puck drop for that game, 7 o'clock on ABC. On the WNBA, we had the Chicago-Indiana third matchup of the season. Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark both big time for each team. Double-doubles on both sides there. But Angel Reese, man, she said it after the game. She said, I got the dog in me. You can't teach that. I'm a dog. You cannot teach that. What I can do, you can't teach. And she is absolutely right. Big, crucial part of the reason why Chicago was able to storm back in that game and win 88-87. So definitely some interesting games between Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark, even going back to LSU and Iowa in the NCAA tournament on the women's side of things. And we're getting them now in the NBA, or excuse me, in the WNBA. Third matchup between these two stars. There's been headlines, comments, and everything from just about every game. And Caitlin Clark, her 13 assists actually set the Indiana Fever record for assists by in a game by a player. So lots of different headlines coming out whenever these two players are on the court facing off against each other. Caitlin talked after the game. She said, you know, Angel Reese did a great job. That entire team did a great job. Said they must have watched film of the last time that that Indiana and Chicago played, which was just a couple of weeks ago. Like I said, this is the third time they've already faced each other this season. Indiana's won two of those matchups. And a fourth one on the way on August 30th. But yeah, Caitlin Clark was talking about it, and she said, must have watched film and saw how physical we were with them the last time they played because they came out and they definitely out-physicaled us. And yeah, it was for sure a physical performance. And just again, kudos to Angel Reese putting that team on her back as a rookie and leading them to that 88-87 comeback. So we'll definitely continue to keep an eye on this matchup. Anytime Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark are on the court together, I'm glad they don't play on the same team. That'd be a very good basketball team, and it'd be a lot of fun to watch. But it's even more fun when they're opposite each other, and they can kind of have this. I don't necessarily want to call it a rivalry, because I feel like off the court, if you got them together off the court, they'd be very nice and they'd be very almost like friends with each other, right? I feel like even, you know, heading into the WNBA draft, there was some promotional things where they went through New York and they seemed very friendly with each other, right? Like the you know, the heat that's on the court is left on the court. When they're off the court, they're very nice and cordial and friendly to each other. So I wouldn't necessarily call this a rivalry per se, maybe, but it is one heck of a great matchup when they're on the court together. And definitely looking to that forward to that next matchup. Again, that'll be August 30th, when next time the Indiana Fever and the Chicago Sky will take on each other for the WNBA. Definitely a game to check out. If you have not watched a WNBA game this year, mark your calendar, August 30th. Watch these two women on the court together. You will not be disappointed one bit. Let's move from the hardwood to the gridiron, where we are looking to see who's going to be the next quarterback to join Trevor Lawrence in the $50 million club. Yeah, Trevor Lawrence now officially, thanks to his new deal with the Jags, making $50 annually. And who's going to be that next quarterback? There's several other quarterbacks throughout the league that already make 50 a year, Joe Burrow being one of them, Lamar Jackson being in that list as well. So there's other quarterbacks who make 50 a year, but Trevor Lawrence is the newest one. We want to try to figure out who's going to be the next quarterback. We've got a list of six guys here that could be that guy. We're going to go through and talk about it. Dak Prescott is the first one we're going to talk about. I think Dak Prescott could very well be added to this list, but I don't think it's going to be A, with the Dallas Cowboys, and B, I don't think he's going to be next. I am one of those people that I firmly believe Dak Prescott will be entering free agency at the end of the season and will be a free agent on the market in 2025. I really do. I think that he has kind of, he's had his time in Dallas. I think he's going to be looking for a new place to go to and a new team to call home, because I think he's done what he can do in Dallas. I think there might be a little bit of not fully bad blood, but maybe they're not communicating well, not necessarily on the same page between him and Jerry Jones and some of the other higher-ups there inside that organization with the Dallas Cowboys. So I definitely feel like Dak Prescott can get that type of money where he's making $50 a year. But I just don't see it happening with the Dallas Cowboys. And in the context of what we're talking about here, we're talking about who is going to be next. Now that Trevor Lawrence has signed his deal, who is going to be next? I don't think Dak Prescott is going to be next. Even if it is a deal with the Cowboys, I think there's one or two other quarterbacks that could potentially sign ahead of him. Jordan Love from the Packers. I don't know. I think the Packers want to keep Jordan Love. I think they see him as their future quarterback. I don't think there's any wavering there between the Packers and Jordan Love. So I think that he's going to get a new deal that's going to have some good money attached to it. But is it going to be $50 million a year? That's the big question here with Jordan Love as far as it goes with playing for the Packers. Is he going to get $50 million a year? He's going to get close. I think he could get close. But as of right now, what Jordan Love has done as a Packer, I don't necessarily know if $50 million a year is what we could see. Kyler Murray, no. Kyler Murray, I don't, again, going back to what we just said about Jordan Love, what he's done for the organization he plays for, I just don't see it valuing him up to being a 50 a year type quarterback. I simply don't. Some other names on this list, Deshaun Watson. If Deshaun comes out and Deshaun Watson is the Deshaun Watson that the Cleveland Browns brought him in there to be, I could see the Browns maybe trying to put a stake in him and keeping him around for quite some time. I almost said I could see them trying to keep them under his thumb or under their thumb, but in context of Deshaun Watson, that's probably not the smartest thing to say. But you know what I'm trying to say. I think Deshaun Watson could potentially get that type of deal if things work out with the Cleveland Browns. But again, is he the next guy? Probably not. Kirk Cousins. Kirk got close with the Atlanta Falcons. I mean, Kirk's super close. He's just a few million off from making $50 a year. So it's not like, you know, he's that far off or it'd be that far-fetched for Kirk Cousins to potentially be that next $50 million a year quarterback. But again, age, coming off a torn Achilles, I think it's just it's going to be too tough for him, right? I think it's going to be very tough for a team to justify giving him that much money at his age, coming off of the injuries that he's coming off of. So Kirk Cousins not going to be the guy. The guy I do think is going to be the next member of the $50 million club is Tua Tagovailoa, Miami, the Dolphins. And I know, going back to what I said about Kyler Murray and Jordan Love, it's a what have you done for your organization lately? But here's the thing. The difference between Tua and Jordan Love and Kyler Murray, maybe not necessarily the difference between Jordan Love and Tua. I think Jordan Love kind of has the same backing and support that Tua has with the Dolphins. I think Jordan Love has that same with the coaching staff and the organization there in Green Bay. But Tua definitely is the guy that the Dolphins want taking snaps for them at the quarterback position moving forward. They want to keep him there. They want to keep him happy. And they're willing to pay whatever they need to pay to make that happen. Because the Miami Dolphins have been an organization that for so long has not had a franchise quarterback. I mean, it's been a revolving door. They've had good quarterbacks. Don't get me wrong. They've had good quarterbacks. But really, what was the last true, real franchise quarterback that the Miami Dolphins had outside of Dan Marino? Since Dan Marino, who's been that one true, you knew he was the starting guy moving forward? Do you want to say Ryan Tannehill? Maybe. But that's a big maybe, right? I mean, there's, like I said, there's been good quarterbacks, don't get me wrong. But a guy worth paying this much money to be your franchise guy, give him the keys to the kingdom and let him go win you a championship, you haven't really had that. The Dolphins feel they have that now with Tua, especially when adding the pieces around him that they've added with Tyreek Hill, bringing in Odell Beckham Jr. You've got Jalen Waddle. You've got A-Chain. You've got all these other guys that they've brought in. They feel like they have their franchise guy that can win them their next Super Bowl, and they're definitely going to pay him. And I would honestly dare say by the start of the regular season, Tua Tagovailoa will have a deal done that is paying him $50 million a year. And I think he is the next quarterback to join Trevor Lawrence and the rest of the other quarterbacks like Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson and a couple of other guys in that $50 million a year club. I don't think he's going to be too far over 50. I think he's going to be kind of like Trevor Lawrence, right around that 50, $51 million a year. But I think he's definitely going to be in the club, and he's going to be that next guy that's going to be in there for the NFL. Again, I think that deal gets done a little closer to the regular season, the start of the regular season. I think right now, too, is just kind of mainly focused on doing what he needs to do to get ready for the upcoming season. So I do think it's on the way, though. I definitely think the talks are close, and honestly, it would not surprise me. I know I said it, I think it's going to happen a little closer to regular season, but if later today we got a little notification on our phone, a little na-na-na, and it's an ESPN alert, and it said that Tua and the Miami Dolphins had agreed to a contract, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised one bit whatsoever. Let's move on now to golf. Scottie Scheffler wins big at TPC River Highland. Needed a little extra playoff there to get it done, but he's able to secure it and bring it home. And I'm just going to say this, just because of recent events. If you're familiar with what happened, let me preface this first by saying, if you're familiar with what happened, you know what happened during the tournament yesterday at TPC River Highland. If you're not, there was some dummies who are protesters who are part of this group that's been doing stuff around the world. They spray painted Stonehenge. They spray painted the side of Taylor Swift's plane. Now they were trying to come out with, I think it was colored smoke bombs, or I don't know if they were trying to spray paint the green or whatever they were doing. But they stormed onto the green there on a hole, I believe it was the 18th hole, there at TPC River Highland yesterday while the tournament is being played. Police had to run out there, tackle them, arrest them, clear them out before you could continue play. I'm just going to say this and throw it out there. I think the cops are a good luck charm for Scottie Scheffler. Hear me out on this. Hear me out on this, all right? May 17th gets arrested going into Valhalla Golf Club in Louisville. Wins the tournament. Yesterday, cops have to come onto the green and arrest, was it like 7 or 8 protesters before we can finish the tournament? Scottie Scheffler wins the tournament. If I'm Scottie Scheffler, from now on, whenever I play a tournament, my caddy is going to be a cop. I'm just saying. He's got some kind of good luck charm there with the police. I mean, yes, he's won 6 of the last 9 events he's played in, so he is a good golfer. I mean, to be the number one golfer in the world, you do have to be a good golfer. But also, at the same time, his last 2 events the police have been involved in that he's won. So, yeah, I'm going to have a police officer as my caddy from now on if I'm Scottie Scheffler. Just throwing that out there. Maybe as a little good luck charm, a little superstition, whatever you want to call it. We've got some local area athletes making some news. Jacob Copeland, who played at Escambia High School, he also played for the Florida Gators. Looks like he has signed a 1-year deal to play with the Pittsburgh Steelers. This is actually his second stint with the Steelers. So he's going to be back in the black and gold in the Steel City there. So good luck to Jacob Copeland. Wish him nothing but the best. And then Gulf Breeze native Abby Jacobs, who has been playing soccer over at South Alabama, has been listed as part of WWE's Next In Line program. If you're not familiar with the Next In Line program, I wasn't. I will admit I'm not the biggest WWE fan, so I had to do kind of a little dig into what the Next In Line program is. The Next In Line provides a clear path for college athletics to the WWE. Next In Line serves to recruit and develop potential future superstars for the WWE. Because I will say, the one thing I do know about the WWE is they stockpile talented athletes unlike anybody else, outside of maybe baseball. You know, baseball has the farm system where you have your minor league teams that are connected to the major league teams. I think outside of maybe baseball, nobody else stockpiles talent like the WWE. So looks like Abby Jacobs is going to be a part of their Next In Line program. She'll have access to all the training facilities and everything down in Orlando, as well as any of the other facilities throughout the country as well. So, again, best of luck to her, just like with Jacob Copeland. It's great to see local area athletes. Abby Jacobs, by the way, from Gulf Breeze. I forgot to mention that a while ago. That's how she's a local and ties into the area. From Gulf Breeze, played a little soccer in college at South Alabama. So definitely wish her and Jacob the best in the next steps of their athletic careers. And definitely we'll be keeping an eye on both of them during football season. And hey, maybe next time WWE comes here to the Bay Center, maybe Abby will be a part of the show and she can perform right here in front of her hometown crowd. That would be awesome. That would be awesome. That is going to do it for today's show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Again, this is The Glass Half Full, an ESPN podcast with me, Jordan Glass. You have a great Monday. I'll talk to you tomorrow on a Taco Tuesday.